This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guests today on Keeping the Faith are Judith Valente, a journalist, and Charles Reinhard. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Reinhard is probably Reinhard. A little bit better. Reinhard isn't bad, though.
Great. Who's a judge. And they've recently edited a book called 20 Poems to Nourish Your Soul. And let me say frankly, the title at first put me off, and I just wasn't sure I was going to like this at all. But I ended up really appreciating your book, which is why I invited you to be a guest on the program. What made me nervous about it was books that have that soul in the title are often kind of smarmy, and the thought of people who edited a book like that picking poems, I thought I would hate the poems, but instead I liked them. And so how did a judge and a journalist come to write this kind of a book, and why is it so good?
Well, I felt the initial reluctance to go with that title as well. It was suggested to us by our editors at Loyola Press, and I think on balance they were probably right, because those that have given it a little time, like apparently you did, they've discovered something there. But I think we originally had a different title, and I don't recall what that title was.
I think our title was Poems for Busy People Seeking the Sacred in the Everyday, because as you mentioned, both my husband and I live lives deeply rooted in the professional world. We live busy, hectic lives, and yet poetry is a daily part of our lives. We couldn't imagine a single day without the lifeblood of poetry. And we wanted to share some poems that have either influenced our lives or in some cases altered the course of our lives.
Well, let's let listeners hear one of these poems. You've selected 20 for this book, and you actually sneak in one more, 21 or maybe even 22, I forget. But pick one that's perhaps representative and will show why you think this is so important. Judy, could we go to you first?
Why? There were two poems that I immediately thought of when Loyola Press asked me to put together an anthology of poems on finding the sacred in the everyday, in the ordinary moments of our lives. And we wrote some personal reflections then to go with the poems. And so the first poem that came to mind when I received this assignment was The Summer Day by Mary Oliver, which is a poem that literally changed the course of my life. I was a journalist all of my career. I worked for the Washington Post first and then the Wall Street Journal. And I was at the peak of my career about 10 years ago. I was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. I was a foreign correspondent in London for a plum assignment for the Wall Street Journal. And lo and behold, the journal had an unprecedented layoff. And I was laid off a year after I had been a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. And I had heard this poem of Mary Oliver's, The Summer Day, a few years before at a poetry writing workshop that I had attended. I was taking some first tentative steps to get back to poetry writing, my first love, after spending many years working on my journalism career. And as I was trying to decide what to do after I was laid off, I literally one day kept pacing back and forth outside on a street thinking about which job — I had several job offers — which job I should take. And the words, the final lines of The Summer Day, kept coming back to me, where she says, "Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" And I realized, I kept thinking about, why did she say wild and precious? And it came to me that if our lives are to be wild and precious, it's going to involve risk. And so I decided I was not going to go back into daily journalism, but that I would try to freelance. And that's what I've done. That's what I did. And I've never looked back. And this is the poem that helped me get to that decision.
And before you read it, let me just remind listeners, this is from 20 Poems to Nourish Your Soul by Loyola Press, and is read by permission of the publisher.
The Summer Day by Mary Oliver. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
The Summer Day, a poem by Mary Oliver, the first in a collection of 20 poems to nourish your soul by Judith Valente and Charles
Reinhard.
I'll get it maybe by the end of the program. Now, let me tell listeners how this book is arranged, because it's unusual. There are the poems that have been selected by these two editors, and then there are what Judy just called personal reflections. I'd called it almost a memoir of the life you two have had together that somehow centers around poetry in spite of Charlie being a judge and Judy being a freelance journalist at this point in her life. And what interested me about the way you wrote your responses to each poem, your reflections on each poem, was that you shared so much of yourself. And although the poems may not be specifically, obviously religious in any way, your reflections often were. And what surprised me about them was that you shared the negative parts of your life, unpleasant parts of your life where you described things you'd done you were embarrassed about, ashamed of, sorry for. That's very unusual, particularly for people in public life to share that kind of thing. What caused you to do that?
I think the answer to your question does have to do with the essential nature of poetry, which reaches inside and touches those nerves, including the most sensitive ones that on the surface don't necessarily have to be the ones that you want to touch on. They're there anyway. One of the central notions that we've built this book on, that has driven us in presenting this book in this fashion, is that poetry gives us openings from our lives, but also to our lives.
We need to interrupt. I'm sorry at this point, but we do have a weather announcement. We're back on Keeping the Faith. Thank you, Jay. Our guests today, let me reintroduce them since we've had this interruption, and we may have more. We'll bring you the weather information as soon as we get it. We're talking with the editors of 20 Poems to Nourish Your Soul, a book just published by Loyola Press. The editors are a journalist, Judith Valente, who has worked for the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and is now doing freelance work for some very interesting places. So before we get to Charlie again, Judy, tell us where do some of your things show up?
Well, I work for PBS TV, a wonderful organization, and I work for a program called Religion and Ethics News Weekly. It's the only religion news show on network television. We're similar in format to the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. And I interview poets on Chicago Public Radio, and I also do religion stories for Chicago Public Radio.
Religion and Ethics News Weekly is on WILL-TV every week on Sundays at 12:30, right after noon on Sundays, with host Bob Abernathy and from time to time Judith Valente. And Charlie Reinhard is a judge in Normal, Illinois, right? What circuit is that?
That's the 11th Judicial Circuit, which is actually housed in Bloomington.
You live in Normal, that's it, okay. And before that, you, of course, were a practicing attorney, and some of the things you were just sharing before we were interrupted by the weather announcement dealt with your life when you were running for office, as I recall.
Yes, indeed. The legal profession is one which is related very closely to my writing. I guess it's because I'm so closely connected to my profession, having been a law student and then a private practitioner and then getting involved in electoral politics, elected state's attorney for 16 years and now circuit judge. One of the poems that we selected for the book I responded to because it was Billy Collins' take upon the need for us to live simpler lives. And, of course, my take on that was in relation to my profession, which has given me the fine art of complication. The legal profession does have a capacity for complicating not only lawyers' lives, but everybody else's lives.
Charlie, let me suggest you read that poem, if that's all right. But before you do, let me tell listeners that you may make comments on this program. This is a live call-in show every Sunday from 5 to 6 p.m. here on WILL. And if you'd like to make a comment, ask a question, we can't let you read a poem because we have to have permissions from publishers to do that, but certainly call with a comment or question. Anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222. This is Steve Shoemaker with Keeping the Faith, and we're talking about the theme of this new book is Finding the Sacred in the Everyday. Now, do you find much sacred in tornadoes?
There's no question that a slowing down of our lives to appreciate the awesome realities associated with a tornado could give us a great deal of insight into the sacred.
I was just giving phone numbers for folks in Champaign, and for folks listening anywhere, that's 1-800-222-9455. That's a toll-free number wherever the program can be heard, and it can be heard in several counties where it's safe enough to be maybe even upstairs at a phone, although other counties are under warnings. In Champaign-Urbana, the phone number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course. There are several local lines you can reach by punching in 333-9455. Elsewhere, including on the Internet, 1-800-222-WILL. Charlie, I was just asking if you might read one of the 20 poems you selected for this book by Billy Collins, former poet laureate for the United States.
The poem is entitled Aimless Love. This morning as I walked along the lakeshore, I fell in love with a wren, and later in the day with a mouse. The cat had dropped under the dining room table. In the shadows of an autumn evening, I fell for a seamstress, still at her machine in the tailor's window. And later for a bowl of broth, steam rising like smoke from a naval battle. This is the best kind of love, I thought, without recompense, without gifts or unkind words, without suspicion or silence on the telephone. The love of the chestnut, the jazz cap and one hand on the wheel, no lust, no slam of the door, the love of the miniature orange tree, the clean white shirt, the hot evening shower, the highway that cuts across Florida. No waiting, no huffiness or rancor, just a twinge every now and then for the wren who had built her nest on a low branch overhanging the water, and for the dead mouse, still dressed in its light brown suit. But my heart is always propped up in a field on its tripod, ready for the next arrow. After I carried the mouse by the tail to a pile of leaves in the woods, I found myself standing at the bathroom sink, gazing down affectionately.
And we have to stop right there for a weather. We're back on the air with Keeping the Faith. Thank you for that weather update. Mike Sola from the Weather Center here at WILL. On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're reading poetry, and it's being interrupted by these weather bulletins. But we were just hearing read very effectively by one of our guests today, a poem by Billy Collins called Aimless Love, and we were down to about the last stanza. Each one of these stanzas has 3, 4, or 5 lines. Charlie, could you go back perhaps to the beginning of this last paragraph or a couple sentences to remind people where they were?
Yes, thank you. After I carried the mouse by the tail to a pile of leaves in the woods, I found myself standing at the bathroom sink, gazing down affectionately at the soap. So patient and soluble, so at home in its pale green soap dish, I could feel myself falling again as I felt its turning in my wet hands and caught the scent of lavender and stone.
We've just heard Aimless Love by Billy Collins from a recently published collection of 20 poems to nourish your soul by Loyola Press. We now have to go for another weather bulletin. We're back on the air. I was just reassuring our guests that we're pretty safe in this room, even though it's on the second floor. There's not been a warning in this county at this point. And we're far away from windows, exterior windows. So listeners can be assured that we're okay here. And we hope you are where you are. Now, reading these poems may give people a little bit of comfort as they're listening to their radios huddled in their basements around this part of central Illinois today. And your focus, sort of your thesis in this, that paying attention to things in everyday life is so important, and the poems you've selected that illustrate that theme, when you're in danger of losing some of those things, that does focus your attention. But ordinarily, you know, when we're not huddled in our basements, we may not be looking at things as carefully as, for example, Billy Collins described in that poem.
I think that is the basic message that I took after a lifetime of complicating my daily life with the arcane mysteries of the law, which are not nearly so essential to understanding that which is really important. But I know Judy has some thoughts as well.
Well, I often think about something Billy Collins himself told me. I had the opportunity to interview him after 9/11. Mm. And he said, you know, at a time like this, people don't ask, what short story should I read or what film should I go to see? But they'll say, do you have a poem? Hmm. People seem to know instinctively that when they go to poems, they'll find something deep and genuine there.
Let me tell listeners that ordinarily we do encourage people to call and ask questions or comments. But today I've had to make the decision, along with other people here at the station, we will not be receiving calls because our engineers are just too overwhelmed. For example, we're going right now to the Weather Center. We are back live on Keeping the Faith. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Our guests today are Judith Valente and Charles Raynard, who are the editors of 20 Poems to Nourish Your Soul, published by Loyola Press. Now, two of your poems are in here. Each one of you has written a poem. You both are published poets. Judith has won awards for her poetry. Charles, this has come more recently for you as I read the parts of this book where you share your own histories. But both of you are published poets, and you've included two of your own poems in here. I'm not going to ask you to read those, but I'm curious as to how much nerve that took. I mean, you know, here's Billy Collins, and well, I'm going to put one of mine in here, too.
Well, the idea was that we were writing this anthology about our favorite poems, and we thought people might, and we mentioned that we write poetry, we read poetry voraciously, and we write poetry, we've published poetry. Maybe people would like to see how we write. And, of course, these poems are very special to us. Charlie's is a poem called Juvenile Day about his work as a judge in judging juvenile cases. And mine was a poem that was written shortly before my mother died. It was really very prescient. It's a poem about contemplating what happens at the moment of death when the soul leaves the body. And I didn't know just how important that subject would come to me when I began writing the poem. And so you mentioned before how is it that these reflections could be so personal that we wrote? And I think with poetry, as with anything that you write in that vein, the more personal, the more universal. It's almost ironic. But people know when you're telling the truth, and you have to absolutely tell the truth in the poems, or that will show through very clearly.
What's the reaction been? Charlie, you have children how old?
I have a daughter 23 and a daughter 29.
And how did they react to you being so revealing of your own life and the life that included them and affected them?
I think they're okay with it, but to be honest, I'm not absolutely certain. Mm-hmm. I think there have been misgivings as my new life has emerged, because the history, which is omitted at this point, is the fact that I was previously married to the mother of my daughters, and I'm now married to Judy. There were a number of years separated in there, and those events aren't connected. But
you do talk about that in the book.
I do talk about it in the book. I do share that in the book, and poetry took me through some very dark nights of loneliness. And just to add to what Judy had indicated earlier, I don't think in terms of reading or writing poetry that the attentive reader or the authentic poet has any choice but mm-hmm. to go to those most personal nerves that are being struck either mm-hmm. by the reading or the writing of the poetry.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked earlier about the fact that the poems you selected, most of them are not explicitly religious. They can be appreciated by people who have a spiritual side to them or curious about spiritual things. There are a couple that are explicitly Christian, I guess. But both of you are Catholic Christians. And the literary arts have not been the strongest for Catholics over the years. There have been exceptions, of course. Flannery O'Connor would come to mind and others. But are there any particularly Catholic poets that you picked?
Well, I would say Jared Manley Hopkins, obviously.
Yeah. But he's not one of the 20. You just sort of sneak him in.
Oh, no, he is. Yes, he is in a section called Work, believe it or not.
I thought it was... Oh, is it? Okay. Well, I misremember.
As kingfishers catch fire, dragonflies draw flame is a poem that people normally don't associate with Work.
Oh, it's God's grandeur that you also put in as part of your reflections.
We put in God's grandeur.
I remember now, okay.
And the reason for that is, it's, you know, there's a wonderful line in there, for this I came. And that's what made us think about that poem in relation to Work. And the point we were trying to make by including that poem in there is that whatever work we do, we can make it a work of the heart. It doesn't matter whether you're a toll collector or you write poetry. You can make your work a spiritual experience. It's what you bring to it. So it was that line that kind of jumped out at me from the poem, as kingfishers catch fire, dragonflies draw flame. Mm-hmm. Of course, his sonnets were untitled, so we just used the first line.
Sure.
But I'd like to go back to your point about the poems not being explicitly religious. We think each of these poems illuminates somehow the sacred in the ordinary, and they may not explicitly talk about God, but God is there in the details. And I like to remember something that a spiritual mentor, John Fontana, once told me, that God isn't the character in our lives. God is the plot. And I feel that God is the plot in these poems.
Today is Easter Sunday. Is there any of these poems that are particularly appropriate for this high holiday for Christians around the world? Anything? Of course, we might be interrupted at any moment by a tornado warning, but if you want to risk trying to read one that might be particularly appropriate for Easter Day?
Well, I might suggest two. One might be the poem, let's see here, my poem Body and Soul gets to that, what happens to the soul, and then Alive Together by Liesl Mueller.
Okay.
I think Resurrection and Alive Together is a strong connection, even though it might be a little counterintuitive. We often read Alive Together because it represents one of the connections in our relationship.
From 20 Poems to Nourish Your Soul, right after this weather announcement. This is Steve Shoemaker on Keeping the Faith, and we're going to hear a poem read by Lisa, a poem of Liesl Mueller's, who's an 80-year-old woman in Chicago who came to this country from Germany that I learned from this book, 20 Poems to Nourish Your Soul, and it'll be read by the two editors of that book, Judy and Charlie.
Just a brief introduction. Yeah. This was the first poem that we heard this poem read on our first date. We were poetry friends, and then we went to this Liesl Mueller reading on our own the first time we were out together, and we felt that we both felt this separately. We didn't know until later we each felt that she was reading directly to us when she read this poem. So I'll read the first part. We like to read it together. I'll read the first part. Charlie will read the second half.
Alive Together, read on the air by permission of the publishers, Loyola Press.
Speaking of marvels, I am alive together with you when I might have been alive with anyone under the sun, when I might have been Abelard's woman or the whore of a Renaissance pope or a peasant wife with not enough food and not enough love, with my children dead of the plague. I might have slept in an alcove next to the man with the golden nose, who poked it into the business of stars, or sewn a starry flag for a general with wooden teeth. I might have been the exemplary Pocahontas, or a woman without a name, weeping in master's bed for my husband exchanged for a mule, my daughter lost in a drunken bet. I might have been stretched on a totem pole to appease a vindictive god, or left a useless girl child to die on a cliff.
I like to think I might have been Mary Shelley in love with a wrong-headed angel, or Mary's friend. I might have been you. This poem is endless. The odds against us are endless. Our chances of being alive together statistically non-existent. Still, we have made it. Alive in a time when rationalists in square hats and hatless Jehovah's Witnesses agree it is almost over. Alive with our lively children, who but for endless ifs might have missed out on being alive together with marvels and follies and longings and lies and wishes and error and humor and mercy. And journeys, and voices, and faces, and colors, and summers, and mornings, and knowledge, and tears, and chance.
Alive Together, a poem by Liesl Mueller, read by Judith Valente first, and then Charles Raynard, the editors of 20 Poems to Nourish Your Soul, which is not only an anthology, but also I'm calling it kind of a joint memoir about their life together, which I found very interesting, and that's why I invited them to be on Keeping the Faith. Let me remind regular listeners that we are not accepting calls today because of the extreme weather situation, and our engineers here in the studios are swamped keeping these regular programs going and giving you the necessary weather information in order to keep you informed and so you'll know what appropriate action to take. But I do apologize to our guest in the studio who drove over here from Bloomington today to read poems. And we've managed to get through a couple without being interrupted, but it's been a little harried. Let's talk about the hardest question for a day like this for people of faith, whether Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, whatever. How can there be a benevolent deity when there's these kind of horrible things that happen in this world, such as tornadoes and, of course, things humans do to one another? You see every day as a judge and as a journalist, but How do you make sense of it, the mess in the world, from a religious perspective?
Well, we have a poem in the book called "The God Who Loves You" by Carl Dennis, and we talk about that very issue in that in the reflection that follows the poem. And I talk about my neighbor standing in my kitchen one day and talking about the day that he lost his faith in God. And it was the day when his father was dying of cancer, and his family and friends had told he and his brother to pray for his father, and his father died anyway. And he said, I lost my faith in God that day. And I knew I couldn't tell him that God had not answered his prayers or God caused his father to die. I mean, that's part of the human condition. We all die. We all suffer, as Christ suffered.
And I'm sorry, but we're going to have to interrupt for another example from our weather. So we're on Keeping the Faith, talking about a very pertinent topic. What happens when you pray for deliverance and don't get it? Judy?
Yes, I was talking about my neighbor who said he lost his faith as a little boy because he prayed for his father to live, his father who had cancer, and his father died. And he was asking me, how could I have kept my faith? And I couldn't tell him why his father died, why his father had to suffer cancer to begin with. But I was able to tell him that I felt strongly that God was with him somehow through this experience. And so the poem, "The God Who Loves You," that we included in the book is about not looking upon God as this master puppeteer or this advance man or this grand organizer who moves us around like so many chess pieces on a table, but as someone who is in our lives, who's not the character but the plot of our lives. And that's what I think Carl Dennis is getting at in this poem, "The God Who Loves You." And it's a particular favorite of Charlie's, so I'd like him to read it.
Judy introduced me to this poem, and we placed it under the heading of acceptance. And I think that's the mysterious concept that responds to your question, Steve. "The God Who Loves You." It must be troubling for the God who loves you to ponder how much happier you'd be today had you been able to glimpse your many futures. It must be painful for him to watch you on Friday evenings driving home from the office, content with your week, three fine houses sold to deserving families, knowing as he does exactly what would have happened had you gone to your second choice for college, knowing the roommate you'd have been allotted whose ardent opinions on painting and music would have kindled in you a lifelong passion. A life 30 points above the life you're living on any scale of satisfaction. And every point, a thorn in the side of the God who loves you. You don't want that. A large-souled man like you, who tries to withhold from your wife the day's disappointments so she can save her empathy for the children. And would you want this God to compare your wife with the woman you were destined to meet on the other campus? It hurts you to think of him ranking the conversation you'd have enjoyed over there higher in insight than the conversation you're used to. And think how this loving God would feel, knowing that the man next in line for your wife would have pleased her more than you ever will, even on your best days when you really try. Can you sleep at night believing a God like that is pacing his cloudy bedroom, harassed by alternatives you're spared by ignorance? The difference between what is and what could have been will remain alive for him even after you cease existing. After you catch a chill running out in the snow for the morning paper, losing 11 years that the God who loves you will feel compelled to imagine scene by scene.
And we have to interrupt again. Weather announcement. This is Steve Shoemaker back on Keeping the Faith. We're hearing a poem read by Carl Dennis called "The God Who Loves You." And since a couple of our listeners had their minds wandering, they might have missed the last couple lines. Could you go back just a few?
Yes, Steve. Thank you. Can you sleep at night believing a God like that is pacing his cloudy bedroom, harassed by alternatives you're spared by ignorance? The difference between what is and what could have been will remain alive for him even after you cease existing. After you catch a chill running out in the snow for the morning paper, losing 11 years that the God who loves you will feel compelled to imagine scene by scene unless you come to the rescue by imagining him no wiser than you are, no God at all, only a friend, no closer than the actual friend you made at college, the one you haven't written in months. Sit down tonight and write him about the life you can talk about with a claim to authority, the life you've witnessed, which for all you know is the life you've chosen.
We've heard, interrupted a bit, a poem called The God Who Loves You by Carl Dennis, which is one of 20 poems to nourish your soul, an anthology that includes personal reflections by its editors, Judith Valente and Charles Raynard, published by Loyola Press. Judy, you started our reflection on this poem by talking about your perspective. You were raised a very traditional Catholic. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Bayonne, New Jersey, and New Jersey is a very Italian-American, very Catholic state. I'm an Italian-American, and one of the earliest influences on my spirituality was my mother. She was a very devout Catholic and used to take me Wednesdays to novenas. And she was a very devout Catholic because her father was a very devout Catholic. And I remember the first thing that he would do waking up in the morning would say the stack of prayers at the kitchen table. He had this stack of prayers that he would read. And the funny thing was, he was in his 80s then. And then when my mother got to be in her 80s, she did the same thing. And I remember seeing her with her stack of prayers first thing in the morning.
Now, when you had some disappointment in your life and when you were laid off from the Wall Street Journal?
Wall Street Journal, right.
Yeah. You were at the time in London.
Yes.
Had recently had some major success in terms of being nominated for a Pulitzer Prize.
I was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, yes.
And yet were laid off. And where did you get hope? Where did you get, at that time you were a single woman in a foreign country and just lost your job.
Well, I knew that it was a devastating disappointment when I was laid off from the Wall Street Journal. It was just came like the proverbial bolt out of the blue. Mm-hmm. But eventually I went through the stages of grief, denial, anger, depression, and then I began to realize that I could look upon this as a wake-up call and that it was a chance to do something I truly wanted to do with my life. And the poems really meant a great deal to me. I mean, I turned to poetry frequently at this time in my life. And we write a lot in the book about how we dealt with loss and disappointment in our lives. And one of my early poetry mentors was Marie Howe, who has a poem in this book. And Marie taught me two very important lessons in my life. The first was that when we go through a horrible experience, she had a difficult childhood, an abusive father. And she said that when she tried to write about this abusive relationship, she tried to find something to praise about it, something that was life-affirming in the whole awful experience. And she said to me something I'll never forget. She said, "The wounded have to become the healers." And so in our book, perhaps I'll be able to get through it without it, a weather interruption.
We'll give it a try.
We have a wonderful Marie Howe poem called "What the Living Do," which she wrote an entire book basically about the death of her brother, Johnny, her younger brother who died of AIDS. And in this poem, she's addressing Johnny. He's died. And she's talking to him about all the small things that we get to do because we're living and how differently these things would look to us, buying a cup of coffee, buying a hairbrush, going to the video store, how different they would look if we were thinking, if we were conscious of the fact that one day that will all come to an end for us. So,
What the Living Do by Marie Howe, found in the recently published book, 20 Poems to Nourish Your Soul, read by permission of the publisher, Loyola Press.
Johnny, the kitchen sink has been clogged for days. Some utensil probably fell down there. And the Drano won't work, but smells dangerous. And the crusty dishes have piled up, waiting for the plumber I still haven't called. This is the everyday we spoke of. It's winter again. The sky's a deep, headstrong blue, and the sunlight pours through the open living room windows because the heat's on too high in here. and I can't turn it off. For weeks now, driving or dropping a bag of groceries in the street, the bag breaking, I've been thinking, this is what the living do. And yesterday, hurrying along those wobbly bricks in the Cambridge sidewalk, spilling my coffee down my wrist and sleeve, I thought it again, and again later when buying a hairbrush. This is it, parking, slamming the car door shut in the cold, what you called that yearning, what you finally gave up. We want the spring to come and the winter to pass. We want whoever to call or not call, a letter, a kiss. We want more and more, and then more of it. But there are moments, walking, when I catch a glimpse of myself in the window glass, say, the window of the corner video store, and I'm gripped by a cherishing so deep for my own blowing hair, chapped face, and unbuttoned coat, that I'm speechless. I am living. I remember you.
In Jewish tradition, being remembered is, of course, one of the most important things that happen after a person has died, has passed on, the regular part of the synagogue service where people remember those who have died in their families or friends. This poem reminded me of that. Poem by Marie Howe, What the Living Do. Tell us about Marie Howe and the circumstances for this poem.
Well, again, I had met Marie Howe at a poetry workshop, the very first one I attended, and her brother had just died of AIDS, her younger brother Johnny, and she was writing about that whole horrible process, but again, trying to find something to affirm in that great suffering and that loss that she endured when her brother died.
We're on Keeping the Faith today. We're not accepting calls because of the weather emergencies that we're reporting to you as soon as we get them. We managed to get through another poem, though, without needing to break, and thank you for reading that. These are all part of this collection that our two guests today have put together for 20 poems to nourish your soul. This is a paperback book by Loyola Press. I forget exactly what it sells for. How much does it cost?
Well, it's only $13.95. It's a wonderful gift book, by the way.
Spoken like a true author, only $13.95. One of the things I appreciated about the book was that these poems are not ones that I had tended to run across in other anthologies. I think you say you consciously chose them partly for that reason. They're by noted poets. But people may not have run across these particular poems. You had your theme, your theme of finding the sacred in everyday life that you describe in the book. Did you have quite a few that you wished you could have included but had to leave out?
Hundreds more. That motivated us to include in the appendix a listing of 20 more poems to nourish your soul, which might give us a starting point for the next volume.
Our guests today are a journalist and a judge. We've not talked much about your professional life, Charlie. As a judge, how do you find time to read poetry when you have all that stuff you have to read for all the cases you have to deal with?
I can't afford not to find the time. I've discovered that it's like breathing work for me, and we read at night before we go to sleep. Virtually every night we read to each other, and we find that if we don't find any other time, we will have that time reserved.
When you pick a poem to read before you go to sleep, do you try to be humorous, be romantic, be spiritual?
Well, sometimes it's simply driven by what's in the New Yorker that month, that week. And we go to a lot of poetry readings, and we'll often buy the book, and then we'll read that book. There's a new selected book by Mary Oliver, New and Selected Poems, and we've been enjoying reading that. And so we're quite eclectic in what we read, but we read poetry all the time.
Well, let me thank our guests for being very courageous to drive from Bloomington today to be on the show live here in Champaign. and for allowing us to interrupt the program regularly while they're trying to read poems that are very important to them. So, Judith Valente, Charles Herrainer, thanks for being our guest. 20 Poems to Nourish Your Soul, Loyola Press. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for this program, Keeping the Faith. Next week, our guest will be Professor Rick Layton from the Program in the Study of Religion here at the University of Illinois, talking about the very pertinent topic, the Bible and the public schools. Another poet will be our guest April 30th on Keeping the Faith, Larry Lieberman. He'll be reading from his new book, Caribs Leap. Bruce Folk will be our guest, also a professor in science here at the university, talking about intelligent design, the weak link. That'll be May 7 here on Keeping the Faith.